and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 131, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man, not with no name, but everyone knows his name. It makes him sound like a golden girl or someone from Cheers. It's Tony Esmond.
I've literally just got a text from Wild Goose that says, "Oh no, looks like we're table neighbours at True Believers."
Yeah. Oh dear. More on that later.
Yes.
And this week is the second show of 2018. And we've already started getting guests. Yes, we don't mess about. We do not mess about. This week we're joined by a man who not only is responsible for a website that's a veritable bottomless pit of fanzines and more. But he's just recently, he's in the process of putting together an epic 100-page... Is it 100-page, Tony? Or is it a little bit more than that?
300, isn't it?
Fucking hell.
It's ridiculous. It's like the Bible of fanzines, and it's amazing. Of course, it's not just him. And there's a lot of fine contributors, of course. The publication is called Fanzine, and that man is David Hathaway Price. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to be
Dave.
Here.
Right, long time coming, mate. Yeah. We've been talking about having you on for a while now, haven't we?
Yeah. About 6 months or so, but I'm a bit phone phobic, so it's difficult to get hold of me.
And normally people have a phobia of this show itself, so you know, at least you're not... Well, you might get that phobia by the end of the night, so we don't know.
But, that's fair enough.
I tell you what I'm not phobic of though, Tony.
Oh fuck me, here we go.
and that's Comic House. Yes.
Oh, Comic House. That was so good. I'm hard.
And you know who else makes him hard? It's Comic House. comichouse.com.
Fuck, you know, he's coming on next week. He's going to hate us. Every advert we do is terrible.
Yes, I know. So he's got plenty of notes to make from this week. But yes, comichouse.com is a place to go to find a massive range of awesome small press and independent comics and graphic novels. The database is just getting bigger and bigger every week. There's some absolutely amazing titles on there already. And there's just seem to be more. Every time I check out the app, there's more and more all the time. If you go to comichouse.com and check out the website, their featured publisher is the fine chaps of Madius Comics at the moment. Well, they're Paper Cuts and Ink Stains, which Mr. Butcher, you took part in, didn't you? You get about a bit, don't you?
I do indeed, yeah.
Oh, filth.
I'm sure it's having sex with lots of people, but it doesn't.
As well as
and we wouldn't judge you if you did.
Well, no. Exactly.
We would if you didn't send us pictures.
Yeah.
By judging, do you mean holding up scorecards?
Oh. Yeah. And that's a new segment is created.
Oh, no. Oh, take that how you will. But as well as the Madius, on the featured title on comichouse.com is fan favourite MPCT by Sarah Millman at the moment. So all good comics, one and all, even more. And if you check out if you want to check out their work, then head to comichouse.com. Or if you want to read them digitally and more, then sign up to the Comic House app, which is brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, the app's great.
Yeah. As a little aside here, and before we get into it, David, is that something you would consider for your new publication? I wouldn't be a bad shout, you know, would it?
Yeah. The thing with the fanzine is I'm trying to keep it totally non-monetarized.
Okay.
So if I could put it up for free, certainly.
Like all
yes.
comics then, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well,
just an idea. There you go.
Yeah. I'm sure something could be arranged.
I think it might be going up on Sequential as well at some point.
Oh, okay. Brill. That's a great site as well.
Could always get in touch with Pete, who runs it, and say that you don't want any funds from it, and maybe sign something to that effect.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping to release it as donation way. So if people wanted to give something to their favourite charity, that would be great.
Quality. Yeah, brilliant. So Pete listens, and Pete, we're sorry for you for you and Comic House for these terrible sponsorship ads, but you know, no retreat, no surrender. We go on.
Next week's episode, there's Pete sort of unloading on the various talk about the various fuck ups we've done. saying, you did this ad was totally wrong, you made us look bad, this ad was even worse.
Yeah.
And then we go for it week by week.
If you like to unload, why not read Savage Dragon 228?
Look, yeah. We might talk about that a bit later. but before we do, sign up to the Comic House app. Don't waste any more time listening to us mess up an advert. Get involved and just download loads of comics. It's a brilliant way to read loads of small press and independent comics. So there you go.
Real.
So, another massive sponsorship ad.
Yeah.
I like to think that our sponsorship ads are a bit more fun than your average.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. Certainly very different.
Then
we buy any car. It's boring in comparison to us, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't want to read some cheesy script for Blumpkin mattresses or whatever there is these days.
I'll fucking buy one of them.
You know, I want like music beds and sound effects. We should have a music bed while we do the Comic House one.
Yeah,
I know that means more work for you.
Yeah, yeah. that's what it is. Every week, Dan, you try to make more work for me. I've noticed this.
I did want an episode where all my F's were bleeped out, but it's
one day.
Maybe a bit too much. One day. Maybe it's a birthday treat at some point.
Nice. Yeah.
When is your birthday, Dan?
It's in July.
Oh, thank God. Not for a long time. Splendid.
Somebody's 40 this year, aren't they?
Who are they?
You are, aren't you, Vince?
Who? No.
You are? Oh, I thought you were 40 this year.
No.
Oh.
Oh, a few years, isn't it? For you, Vinster.
I'm 38 this year.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what you are? Oh, okay.
What do I...
Oh, God. Don't tell me I'm the oldest person to you.
I don't know. I might give you a run for the money, my friend.
Toby's... Tony's got cobwebs on his balls.
Turn your camera on, my friend. I'll show you.
No, don't.
don't not to be the case.
Trust me. We've all made that mistake. And we got a Blumpkin mattress out of it. Anyway.
Oh, my God. This has gone badly.
I know. Yeah. But so let's get it back on track and have a proper conversation with David. Now, in the lifetime of this little show, we've talked about many a comic event and more. You know, we haven't run out of things to talk about in all these weeks.
No.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
And every so often, a very different kind of publication will pop up in our chats. I know Tony's brought up quite a few times over the past couple of years. They're made with a huge amount of dedication, passion and love for the medium we all love, but they aren't necessarily the sort of thing you'll find on the shelves of Forbidden Planet anytime soon.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've all shopped there now and then, you know.
Yep.
Don't try to be a hipster and say you don't. Do you know what I mean? But I am, of course, talking about the mighty fanzine. Now, we've been wanting to talk about the world of fanzines for quite some time, as we said. This show's been a long time coming. And I'm going to come right out and say it right now. It's an area of comics that I hardly know anything about, mainly because I didn't have much access to fanzines and such growing up, living in the Shire.
Yeah.
So I am thoroughly looking forward to hearing more about it all, because I know there's a couple of guys on this show that have quite a lot of knowledge about it. So
I've
with
got a
that
few
in mind,
boxes full of them. Yeah,
you got boxes full of them. Oh, blimey!
Yeah,
crikey.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah,
send them to me and I'll archive them.
I was thinking I've got a couple here. I might send you. Yeah, yeah.
I gave away all my wizards.
So that's the one that I would say probably you two guys, Dan and Vince, would know more about. Is that right?
See, yeah.
Dan Comics International.
Is that a fanzine? I will
get
onto it.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. We'll get. Yeah. there's a question in a minute that I'll ask, but I'm gonna kick it all off with this question, because there's a lot of our listeners who may not have read a fanzine or necessarily know what they are.
Yep.
So in the modern world of comics and self-publishing, what exactly are fanzines, and like where do they fit in at the moment?
I'm not sure they do, to be honest. Okay. Which is probably not what you want to hear. my interest has always been from the sort of 80s forward to the 90s. That's when I was involved with it. And they were small publications, non-profit making, perhaps between 50 and 200, if you were lucky. Just discussing comics, primarily the American market. Sometimes the British market. today I'm not quite sure, to be honest, what's going on. Yeah. I think they've been superseded, really, by the net, the ability to share information and to give your opinions almost instantly and to get feedback. I don't know really if there's any modern fanzine being published in print form.
Yeah. Is what about? I was going to say something like Tripwire, maybe, but that's almost like a business now, isn't it? And it's very expensive to buy.
Could the Pool List from Pipe Dream,
or the Pool List?
That could be considered a fanzine on small press comics.
But when does a fanzine become a magazine? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
is there a difference?
When it's just made by fans for no profit, is that a line? Do you think, Dave? Or
I would have said so. Yes, if it's non-profit making and it's done for the love of it and for the communication aspect, I would say that makes a fanzine.
Right,
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Wizard, and that was a major part of like.
Well, they made a few quid out of that, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. But that was a magazine, wasn't it? You know, even though there were articles, interviews, and stuff. This was like publishing, like you get, I know, Woman's Weekly. You know about that, Tony?
Yeah, I love a bit of Woman's Weekly.
It's the knitting patterns, isn't it?
No. Go on, mate, sorry.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think there's been in the last few years, there's been a couple of attempts to release a fanzine online and pay for it by subscription.
Yeah.
But they just haven't got the subscribers, and it's folded after a few issues, which is a real shame.
I think you've kind of identified that kind of the comics with the net, comics have struggled, in my mind at least, struggled to find their place a little bit, and that's hit fanzines even more with, like you said, the advent of being able to give your opinion over something immediate, and someone can kind of whack up a blog post about what they think about a comic, and then it's out there. It's a shame because it's nice getting the printed material and having the kind of all the different articles in one go in your hand, and with the kind of like the artwork and stuff.
Yeah.
The fanzine more comes across as like an object of kind of love and passion being put into it.
And I think the detail you used to get in fanzines as well, Dave, I think you don't see that on the net. I mean, I was surfing for a couple of articles, looking for a couple of articles about stuff today. And you just can't find the detail that you would have found perhaps back in the day with stuff. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, to be honest, it's so immediate now that fact-checking doesn't come into it as far as I can see.
Yeah.
I don't mean that disparagingly to anyone, but it's like 24-hour news. You know, you have to get the stuff out there to keep people viewing your site and maybe selling advertising that way, and sometimes maybe, you know, facts aren't checked as much as they might well be.
Yeah, and you've got the reach as well. I mean you can get a view, you can get, you know, 1,000 reads on an article in a day.
Yeah.
But I think the only one I can think about would be Fancy Advertiser, where I read an interview where they said they were up to 1,000.
Some of the more commercial ones were Fancy Advertiser, BEM, perhaps, Speaking
or Arkansas, Sword, maybe,
Arkansas.
Or...
Those had a broad reach, but still, it was a much slower process. You could insult someone in the letter column, for instance, and you'd have to wait. You'd have to wait 3 months for it to come back,
at least.
Invite you.
Yeah, and there were a few. I mean, like the internet, there were a few little spats going on, weren't there?
Mm.
You know.
Oh, gobs, yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, I went to one of the Marts up in London, and I was talking to someone, and they were saying, what you've got to understand, Dave, is that fandom in the 80s was basically 5, 6, 7 people who hated the sight of each other. There is a grain of truth in that.
Yeah.
But there was also a lot of love as well.
Yeah.
I've got to say that.
It's weird. I used to know someone who kind of was quite a lot into the martial arts stuff, and the martial arts magazines were very much like that as well. Like, they would be kind of writing letters to each other, and people would turn up at other people's classes saying, I heard you talking shit about me in, like, Martial Arts Illustrated, whatever. And it's like, bloody hell. Never got that bad in comics, I hope.
Yeah. I think it's the same with the punk. The punk scene had a big fanzine scene as well, didn't it? As well, I think, Dave. You know, there can be like hugely expensive, some of the punk music fanzines.
Oh yeah. I mean, my specialization is the comic fanzines, but the world of fanzines itself is this stuff out there for everyone. There's a fanzine convention, isn't there, in Bristol, I believe?
Oh, okay.
At some point during the year.
Well, is that the Bristol Comic and Zine Fair? Because they actually make a point of saying zine, don't they?
I was gonna get to this actually, because I think people's conceptions, preconceptions almost, of what a zine is. I often hear hipsters refer to things that are small press comics with a couple of articles put in as zines. It's very different from what we're talking about, like, you know, Legion Outpost and, you know, Speakeasy and all this sort of thing. But I think I've heard about, there's a couple of little scenes, especially the Gosh Comic scene, they talk about they're doing a zine. I hear that a lot. And I think that's slightly different from what we're talking about here, I think, Dave, is that would be a small press, hippie, sort of hipster, indie scene type convention. But there wouldn't be there might be a magazine that's got a few drawings in it and an item from a particular band or something like that. I think, you know, and a few mixtapes on the table. I think it's a little bit different.
Thing is, I'm so old now that the terminology has changed.
It has.
Back in the 80s with Fast Fiction and things like that, they were called strip zines. And they were very very basic, really, in terms of production values. The same sort of equivalent now are the things that you guys are putting out, which are very, very professional.
You've obviously never read mine.
I think that touches on what we were going to get to as well, Dave. Where did they? Because in the UK we fell obviously a little behind America. So where was? I know that you're. Am I right in thinking you're celebrating 50 years?
I mean, in 1967, Anthony Roche brought out Mary Marvel fanzine, and later Heroes Unlimited. Or around that point, the first one in Britain was called Kapow, and that was by Steve Moore.
Was that the Steve Phil Moore Black. Who's the 2000 AD writer?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
So it's sort of, there were a couple before that. Fantasy Advertiser came out about 66 or 67, I think. But it was primarily Frank Dobson's sell-in list. He was selling magazines and comics and things like that. And gradually he started putting articles and letters in there, and it became fanzine. But Kapow was the first, generally regarded as the first UK fanzine.
Yeah, you get a lot of crossover with that, don't you? I bought some Fantasy Traders the other day, and that is basically some. It looks like a lot of these. They look like someone had literally just sat on a typewriter.
Yeah,
and definitely. With a lot of without obviously even the benefit of perhaps Tippex at the time, and typed out a list of comics they had for sale. I'm looking at one here now. It says Marvel Spotlight 8, 9, 11, 12, and 11, 8, 9, 11, and 12, 10p each.
Yeah,
it's like that. And then on the back cover was literally another sort of typewriter article about what's going on at DC and what's going on at Marvel, which by the time it probably hit your letterbox would have been about 2 months out of date, I suspect.
Yeah, so exactly. Looks, so you'd have to try and get on the phone as quick as you can to reserve stuff. Or put something in the post and hope for the best. And they'd always say, well, if we've already sold it, we'll send you back your money, your postal order or whatever.
Okay, yeah. So how did you get into it? What were you collecting back in the day? Where were your first sort of touches with it?
I was collecting the X-Men.
Right.
And I read in one of the weekly UK magazines, Super Spider-Man or something like that.
Yeah.
An advert for Cerebro.
I've got a couple of
X-Men fan club.
Yeah.
By Jeff Wilnitz, Jeff Lamprey. And it just ballooned from there. It was such a joy to find out that there were other people about who were reading comics and were interested in talking about them. And it was a revelation that they were published in their own magazines.
Because yes, people have got to remember, this is before. So you like I, was probably buying our comics at newsagents. Was that
right? Yeah.
And so there was no comic community in the shop or anything?
No. There were a couple of comic shops in Cardiff, but I very rarely got there. And they weren't really shops. They were little stores within other stores.
Yeah. Because it was like you used to have to be in the know. I remember I was reading an extract from your fanzine a minute ago, and it was saying that there was a market stall somewhere in Church Street Market, and if you knew where to go, you could get secondhand paperbacks and the odd Marvel comic.
Yeah,
you know, it was a sort of, there was a little sort of circuit that you'd do as a fan in London back then, wasn't there? You know,
I mean, when I started reading comics in the mid late 60s, they'd either come round the door with the Sunday papers, or you go to the corner shop and you'd find these waterlogged comics from DC and Marvel that had been sent over as ballast.
Yes,
they'd been used to weight issues. And it was only gradually then through the 1970s where the distribution became a lot better.
Yeah,
you guys don't know you're born.
No. Yeah, we just each bought a comic by clicking our computer screens a minute ago.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
We had to go out hunting these things in loincloths.
Didn't you have a story, Vince, of like you and someone else would always be going down to a corner shop to get an issue of a comic?
Those magical days of like going to the local newsagent just down the road and like finding. Just there was never a constant like X-Men run.
No,
I can't remember what issue it was. It was when Rogue comes back from the dead in the Savage Land with Magneto.
Yeah,
I think it's 287 or something like that. That'd be amazing if I got that right. But finding that, you know, that was like there was no X-Men for ages, and then this issue arrives, and it's like a holy grail. You know, when you don't have a comics rack, and you've just got the whatever issues you can get. Oh, they were the
and
best.
And you were never certain you could get the next one.
No.
You just hoped that you could.
At the most, you would probably get a 3 or 4 issue run, and then they just wouldn't have. you wouldn't see it for months. But
yeah.
The direct market and the comic shops, as they started opening up, was a godsend.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah,
because at that time, as you say, before then, it was very hit and miss what you could get hold of.
I mean, it was actually a godsend for you and I, or the four of us. But do you think, I mean, I'll put this out there for all of you, actually, sort of in general terms. Do you think it was a godsend for comics, or do you think it made them a niche hobby then suddenly? Do you know what I mean?
I think
it was fantastic. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's fantastic because everyone knew where to go. You know, the fans knew. But we lost a lot of the, you know, the newsagent comics and stuff like that. You wouldn't see as many of them. I know, for instance, in America, I think Archie comics are still on the newsstands, aren't they? But other than
they're like in supermarkets, aren't they?
Yeah. Other than that, you know, there's no comics anywhere.
But the kind of newsagents fucked up in as much as they didn't realise the potential there, and they should have kind of capitalised on that.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. So, Dave, who were these characters? Who were the people who were sort of pushing these comics out? So, you know, I think Martin Locke and Steve Moore and, you know, there's a few people out there, aren't there, who were complicit, I suppose. Lou Stringer? Yeah.
I mean, Lou was active about the same time I was. He went on and became professional, of course. A lot of it came out of the wish to sell their own comics.
Right.
They created fanzines around them. But then later on, it became just purely for the love of being in print. It was all about community. It was about contacting people, the other end of the country, talking about comics, not feeling like the outsider.
Yeah.
I always fancied myself as an artist. So when Jeff Lamprey asked for contributions for his fanzine, for Cerebro, and I sent a couple of, I say drawings, they were just scribbles, really, into him. And he printed them.
Yeah.
That was such an ego boost.
Yeah.
And it made me want to do more and more and get more and more involved.
Yeah, I mean, my first ever anything being printed anywhere was in, there was a comic shop in Colchester that ran a fanzine, it only lasted 3 issues, called After Image. Now, it's not the one that Lou did, I don't think you find, which was the one I was thinking of sending to you, actually. But I got 2 letters printed on that, and I ended up buying back one because I'd lost the copy I had, and I bought it back, and it is the most terrible letter I've ever seen in my life. It is. So I feel your pain around that, Dave, I've got to tell you. But It wasn't uncommon for you to see illustrations from fans, but they would be done on like lined paper or something like that, yeah. And they were just like photocopied as part of the page or something, you know.
Yeah, but it was just so nice to see your work in print, even if it wasn't printed particularly well in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, Des Skin had a hand in quite a lot of this as well. Was he something to do with Fantasy Advertiser?
Des Skin straddles fandom like a giant. Really, he was right there in the early days at the very first comic convention, and he took over Fantasy Advertiser actually from Frank Dobson,
right? Okay.
And started pushing his comic as well because he was a dealer initially. Right.
He still is, isn't he? I mean, he still is.
Yeah,
if you try and buy Warrior on eBay, I guarantee it will come from somewhere in Brighton where he lives.
Yeah.
But for those who don't know who Des Skin is, he started Doctor Who Weekly, that then became monthly. He was a big part of the sort of bringing English talent into Marvel UK. And then, of course, he really took off when he did Warrior magazine, which was really, really groundbreaking at the time. But that's where he started, was it? Fantasy Advertiser, was it? Or
he started in Fantasy Advertiser, yeah, and the zines that were coming out around 69, 70, right. 71, around that time. Okay. But he also did... I've lost my track.
That's right. So you're saying what else Des Skin did? I can't. Was it because if you go to desskin.com, I tried to go there today, but I don't know if the site's down.
The site is down for some reason. I think he's still active on Facebook at the moment, but I haven't seen the site active itself for a month or so.
Right. Okay.
Perhaps and he's then, doing a major upgrade. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope he's not banged up. Not that he ever would be, obviously. The other ones that you had at the time, you had Bem, which was that Bemused something or other originally, is that right?
Bemusing, yes.
Bemusing,
then
yeah.
It got shortened to Bem and Bug-Eyed Monsters.
Was Martin Locke, was that?
Martin Locke was involved in that, yeah.
He's quite a figure, isn't he, I think.
He, again, there were about six or seven very prominent people in fandom, and they had a hand in everything. And he was a prolific letter writer and article producer for other magazines as well.
Right.
And he used lots of pseudonyms.
Yeah, even in his own. I've read that in your magazine. Yeah. And why was that? Do you know, or?
Just so that it would seem that there were more people contributing to the fanzines themselves. it was a very, very small community, really, and there was always a fight against apathy about people not being asked to get off their bums and to actually contribute something.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's a lot of people who are now pros who were involved in the fanzine scene, wasn't there?
Yeah. Brian Bollard, he dabbled in it.
He did quite a few covers, Bollard, didn't he, I think?
Yeah, for Bem.
Yes, yeah. And I think Arkansas further down the line. I know I've got a cover by him in front of me, and I think Gibbons did covers for Arkansas. All sorts of people did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan Moore, he started as a 16-year-old doing a couple of bits for fanzines. And if you go on eBay... you'll find that his early fanzine work it commands amazing prices.
Right.
Actually, his earliest appearance, I think it's in Utopia, his earliest appearance, I think it went for something like $2,500.
Bloody hell.
A couple of years ago.
Right. And that was even before Maxwell the Cat. Was it Maxwell the Cat? Was that the character he did?
Yeah. For Sounds magazine.
That's right. Which I think was printed later. Was it by someone like Fast Fiction or someone like that?
I think it appeared in one of the zines. I think Alan gave permission to just use it as you wanted.
Right.
So it was reprinted in one of the fanzines. And then I think there was a collected edition as well.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through a list of people who did Bem covers. And Brian Talbot did a few as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think. Kevin O'Neill did quite a few covers. I know he did a couple of Arkansas. I've got a feeling he did a Speakeasy as well. The one I always give as the specific example is perhaps an American one, but wasn't Jim Shooter producing Legion Outpost, and that's what got him picked up by Marvel? Or DC, yeah. Rather. Yeah.
It may well be.
Yeah.
You know, there was, the American fanzines were very much more professional than the British ones, I would say, in terms of production values, at least.
That could be like a legitimate way into the industry, because there's that thing, isn't it? Once someone gets in via a way, they kind of seal that way off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess if you ran a good fanzine and you was giving out a good product and you knew about the DC, Marvel, wherever you're going to get hired, I'm surely that kind of that stands you in good stead.
Yeah, it must do.
Richard Burton, for instance, who did Comic Media News International, he went on to work for IPC, and at one point he was assistant in Death Skin at Marvel UK.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you go.
It was a real training ground for journalists and people who wanted to write and produce artwork.
Yeah. Hmm. And you got early Steve Dillon and Alan Davis as well in a lot of magazines.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you say, like the sketches you did or the spot illustrations you were doing, these were guys doing them as well, weren't they, you know?
Mm. Yeah. I guess talent will always out. I mean, those guys made it, and I ended up teaching.
Yeah.
The difference being, like you mentioned earlier, with the net, like if these guys are putting themselves forward and working to get their stuff in these magazines or fanzines back in the day, that was one thing. But now, like you said, with the net, and anyone can kind of put up anything anywhere of sort of the quality is all over the shop.
Yeah,
there's so much out there that it's kind of, well. But once, like you say, when someone putting their work forward, getting out there, getting in touch with people, getting their work in the fanzine, that's a kind of, this person's worked here to get this, so there's a bit more kind of thing for them.
Because the community's never been huge, has it? The comics community. I mean, it may seem like it's taken over the world, but let's be honest, you know, comics themselves, they're still a niche within a niche sort of thing.
Yeah,
the people who buy them as well.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? And the fanzines are even further a niche within that. You know?
Yeah. Exactly, but back in the day, like in those early days, though the fanzines were more obviously a place that publishers could look at, you know, and spot these sort of artists. But these days, there's so much of it now. I mean, where do people look for it? You know, publishers are never going to think, let's look to a fanzine, you know, and see what art is in there. I mean, hopefully they do, but, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm disappointed with is in the current state of taking portfolios to shows or taking portfolios to Comic-Cons, I don't know if people are there to actually view the work anymore.
The actual proper people.
Commissioning editors.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah, we've had a brush with that. Well, you have, Dan, haven't you?
The people I've spoken to kind of at cons who have done it a lot, sometimes the people who are there to make that decision, they're not there. They're like, they may say, we'll give you a card and say, get in contact with Joe Bloggs, and they can have a look. And they're the person to go to, not the kind of the first, not the person at the show. So that kind of step has been removed. Whereas maybe in the past, you'd speak to someone who would have a direct line to kind of say yay or no.
Do you think there's a difference in portfolio reviews now? Because you've just got the general term portfolio review. So, you know, it could be anyone there. I mean, you could go up to a portfolio review for some publisher and you don't know if it's the T-boy doing it. Whereas, if you say a portfolio review with Tom Breville of Marvel, you know immediately, you know, Christ, you know who you're talking to. But I think sometimes it's a little bit muddier with the general portfolio reviews.
Yeah.
In the 80s, I went up to some of the UCAC comic conventions in London, and I was there with David Roach at one point, because he was a fellow Cardiff lad, and he just went up and started showing his work to people from 2000 AD and so on, and getting that immediate feedback.
Yeah,
and you know, it led to him being employed by them.
That's brilliant. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember as well, back when I used to go to conventions, and I did UCAC, probably like you did, Dave, but you'd wander up and down that staircase that you always seemed to be on, going to talks and going back to the dealer's room and going and getting a coffee and sort of thing, and you'd pass people, and you would not have a Scooby-Doo who they were either, would you?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I sat in a room listening to this American bloke, and it took me sort of 20 minutes to realise it was Dave Sim.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because we never saw them, did we? Yeah. We never saw what these people looked like. because all we had was these sort of often slightly badly photocopied fanzines that had sometimes the print was so dense on a page it was hard to read. Do you remember those days, sort of thing?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, that, do you remember the early photocopiers that came out about 72, 73, around there? You try to photocopy. Yeah. but if you try to copy an area of solid black, for instance, what you'd get would be a square, for instance, with black lines and this fuzzy sort of grey colour in the middle. They just couldn't handle them. And if they used glossy paper, all the toner would just come off in your hands. You'd end up wearing the article.
I think going back to the Wizard magazine, that was how I found out how a lot of writers and artists, what they look like, because they used to do a top 10 writers and top 10. And I was like, oh, fuck, that's what he looks like.
I just had
no clue.
Yeah, I've got. Should we just do a little? We'll do a little excerpt. I've got Fantasy Advertiser from 1986. It's number 98. I don't know if you've got this one, David. It's got Doctor Fate and Doctor Strange fighting each other on the cover. Ring any bells?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the quality of what you used to get in it. It's literally full of adverts for comic shops, that some of which I don't even remember. I didn't know there was a quality art that was part of quality comics. A Des Skin Shop. Did you know that?
No.
It was in the King's Road. Yeah, never knew anything about that. But what it has got here is it's got the Eagle Awards 1986. Now, the Eagle Awards for convention goers, especially UCAC in the early days of Bristol, were a big deal, weren't they?
Mm.
You know. So
are
1986.
They still
going? I'm sure the Eagle Awards are going. Yeah, I'll double check that.
Okay.
That was something that Richard Burton had a hand in creating.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah. It was Hassan Youssef something to do with that as well, I think. I don't know.
He used to run the conventions with Frank Plowright.
That's right. Yeah, remember them to this day. Yeah. Okay, so let's have a competition. Right, there's an American section, and it's got best penciler, best inker, and best writer. So 1986, who do we think won best penciler?
John Byrne. No.
He's third. Good shout.
Arthur Adams. I'm just taking a
second. Fucking hell, dude.
Nice one. Go for number one. Come on, Vince.
God, you can get this now. You can get it.
Oh God.
It's a teenage one. Come on.
A teenage one.
Oh. No, it was similar to that. That's my little clue.
Oh. Oh God.
Off.
No.
I'm just going to dive in here. Is it Perez?
On. Yes.
Oh, damn, yeah, not the name I was thinking of. Damn.
Okay, best writer in an American comic. So he doesn't necessarily have to be American. 1986. The winner was a landslide.
Ooh.
More best writer. Chris Claremont.
Second.
Was it Alan Moore?
Alan Moore, yeah. Third was Marv Wolfman.
Yeah.
Okay, so best comic.
Teen Titans.
I was about to say Teen Titan there.
Mm. No,
Swamp Thing?
Yes, Swamp Thing first.
Was it?
Of course.
I'm on fire.
You're doing well. You are. Yeah. See, Swamp Thing, Crisis, and then X-Men. Okay. Favourite character? This is a telling one, isn't it?
Ooh. Wolverine, always a shot.
Wolverine's number two. Good shout.
Say Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing's number three.
Looking at those sort of titles that were quite big at the time, they all seem to be from similar sort of titles, don't they? I don't know, Robin, Nightwing.
No, it was Batman. There you
go.
Okay,
yeah. Okay, specialist publication. So this falls exactly into what we're talking about now. So I'll give you. Let's just do David. Come on, let's test have your knowledge here, dude. Down to you. Right.
Oh so, well, it was always a bit strange when the people running the Eagle Awards won them.
Strange, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I said the Eagle Awards stopped running in 2012.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay.
If it's Fantasy Advertiser, I'd say that Fantasy Advertiser.
Right. It's Speakeasy number one, Fantasy Advertiser number two, but only by 9 points, and Arkansas. A long way behind number three. There you go. it's a funny one, isn't it? Because some of those might have only had one issue out that year or something like that. It's hard to sort of judge, isn't it? You know, because I know certainly Arkansas was a little bit. You didn't see it all the time, did you? You know.
No, it was a lovely piece of work. It got criticised. Paul got criticised sometimes, unfairly, I think, that it had no personality.
Right.
But it wasn't about Paul. It was about the interviews, and they had some tremendous interviews in that fanzine.
They did. Yeah. I'm looking at one. It's got a Dave Sim, Dave Gibbons, Dave McKean, Paul Neary, and Charles Vess. That's not bad, is it? I mean, if you had them at a convention, that would be a busy convention, I would suggest. Yeah.
Was that one of the ones where Brian Boland did a cover?
This is a Dave Gibbons cover, this one, actually, of the comedian. Okay. Yeah, so, like, real high quality, you know, production values in a lot of the later ones, wasn't there?
Mm. Oh, yeah, and the covers that these guys did, they weren't just things that were sort of scribbled off at conventions and marts and things. They took their time with them. And,
yeah.
Really, really, some special work appeared in them.
Yeah. Did you subscribe to any, Dave? Did you get some through the post, or did you send off a check like I did, and then sort of waited for months for each issue to arrive? Or
yeah, that's right. Just sent them. I didn't really buy them at marts and conventions, and so on. It was purely by reading reviews in one fanzine, which led you to another one, which led you to another one, and you sent off your postal order or what have you, and you sat back and waited.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you wouldn't get that issue. You'd get the next issue if they'd sold out, and you'd get a nice little handwritten note saying, sorry, we'll send you the next one when it's available.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're very much of their time, aren't they? Where was what was the last few to come out? Where did it eventually die? And do you know why, or right at that point?
I think the net killed it off, to be honest with you.
There was no one who just said, like, I've had enough that you know of, and they said, right, I'm stopping it here, or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really nicely produced ones in the 90s. 95, probably, the last ones came out.
Okay.
Of that particular type.
Yeah, would you count Comics International at all, or in that bag?
That's Dez's, isn't it?
Which was very long-running, wasn't it? I mean, it's hundreds of issues.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's got some lovely lovely stuff in it, and it's very professional, but it was a money-making exercise, I believe.
Right, okay.
So I wouldn't count it as a fanzine as such. It was on sale in newsagents, I think. Specialist shops,
yeah.
Specialist shops, at least.
Yeah, I definitely I buy mine at Comic Showcase or somewhere like that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't call it a fanzine as such.
Okay,
not for me in any case.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess we're going by that thing of, like, if it makes money, it's you can't really call it a fanzine.
I'm frequently wrong, so.
Yeah. Oh,
that's why you belong on this show.
Yeah, no strangers to that on the ACP.
So what were your sort of highlights of? Because basically, for those that don't know, you've set up a website, and you are collating all the as many UK only, is it?
Yeah, about 4 years ago, I joined a couple of comic-centric Facebook pages, and I happened to see someone who had bought some Cerebros. I hadn't thought about fanzines or comics as such for about 10-15 years, and it was such a sort of shock to see my work appear on Facebook on one of these comic sites. So I contacted the guy and said, you don't want to sell this, do you? And he said, no, but I'll send you a colour photocopy of your cover that you did for issue 23 of Cerebro.
Yeah.
Out of the blue. And it was such a kind act. And I thought, well, let's go and see if there's any more fanzines out there. So I went trawling Evil Bay and a couple of other places and discovered that they did sometimes come up for sale. And I just got interested again.
Right.
And then I followed some links to Lou Stringer's site, and someone had said on one of his pages, wouldn't it be nice if someone would scan some of the old fanzines and put them up for people to read.
Yeah.
And I realized that that was 8 years previous and nobody had done it as yet. So I thought, right, let's give it a go. So I started contacting editors and getting permission and getting as much material together as I could, and put it online.
Oh, cool. So do people sort of lend you their fanzines, do they now? Is that the...
Yeah, I've bought quite a few myself. Lots of people have donated zines to me, their collections, because they support what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But lots of other people as well have scanned their own collections and sent those to me to be put up online.
Cool.
Brilliant.
And I've got to say that people have been tremendously kind, especially the editors and publishers. They didn't need to do this. They didn't need to give me permission to do this. But unfailingly, they've said, yes, go for it. We'd love to see our work available to more people.
Mm. Yeah. It's good to have, they put in all this effort and work, have a bit of a legacy and have it all collated in one place where people can look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's bundles of stuff there that's just superb, isn't there, you know?
It would be a shame that some of the work would be seen by so few people. Because it was very ephemeral, you know, it would be there, it would disappear. People would throw their fanzines away or they would get chucked out. Yeah. They're in very bad condition, some of these things, because they just weren't looked after. They weren't seen as something to be saved or cherished. In some cases, and it's lovely to think that something that was originally seen by maybe 50 people can now be seen by thousands of people.
Yeah. So have you had any real sort of highlights that you found and you thought, oh, that interview by such and such, that's really revealing, or that piece of art, or that must have been that guy's first sort of published story, but it appeared here? Are there any little high points that have come out from stuff that you found, you know?
I'm not really a historian in that way. I read and enjoy the things. I was very, very pleased to get hold of my first fanzine that I had work published in. That was my holy grail for quite a while.
And what was that?
That was Cerebro number 6.
6. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay.
And
what
I also
did you do in there, Dave? What happened to that?
It was a little drawing on the editorial page of an X-Men character.
Right, bit of a saucy one or not?
No. It was ripped off, almost traced from the original comic, if I can remember right. And that was in 1979.
Brilliant.
But it was such a lovely thing to be able to get hold of after all these years.
Yeah. Similar to me, when I bought this fanzine that I had a letter in, I thought, oh my god, I forgot about that, and I think I've got a letter in that, and I bought it off Evil Bay and read it, and I was so embarrassed with the absolute shite. I mean, I talk shite even now, but even then it was terrible. Yeah. Oh my god. But there's people. I don't. In a way, I admire it, and perhaps I shouldn't. But people were a little bit more free with their opinions in fanzines, weren't they? You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I think I mentioned to you earlier. I've been talking to people recently, and they don't just know where the bodies are buried.
Yeah.
In some cases, they buried the bodies. there were little wars going on. And it got quite heated and quite nasty. I won't go into too much detail, but there was a fanzine that came out and it had to cease publication for a year or so because a dealer who had been criticized by it attempted to sue them. So they had that holding. They had a court case over their head for over a year, and that meant they couldn't publish.
Wow. Okay.
How did that
very
play
similar
out?
Go on.
Eventually, it turned out to be totally spurious, and it came back. The publication came back, and the dealer, I think, dropped out of dealing.
Right. Yeah, we mean comic dealing, not the dealing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely comic dealing.
So very similar to, you know, on a much larger scale, stuff like the Comics Journal was encountering. The Comics Journal was I think, sued numerous times, wasn't it? Yeah. There's the famous Harlan Ellison, Jim Shooter, libel type case that went on, wasn't there? I think fills up like a 200-page issue of the Comics Journal about him saying something about him and him saying something back, and all ends up in court, and they had a court transcript, you know, this sort of thing. People think, you know, just, you know, people kicking off over a storyline these days, but back then people were literally going to court against each other, you know.
Very much in the American scene was very much larger. The British scene, as I said, maybe 50, 200 people would see a comment. A couple of those would disagree with it. But really, it was handbags at dawn with a lot of this. It never got very serious in terms of court cases and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, me and my pals, who used to go to comic shops in London, it was all the same faces, all the same people at the counters. And some of these people are the people you now see at London comic marts as well. But we used to call it like the Bermuda Triangle, because you had, like, I think Comic Showcase was in Monmouth Street, Forbidden Planet was in Denmark Street. You know, if you wanted to go a bit further afield, you could head up to Mega City in Camden and that sort of thing. And there was literally, you could walk around five or six, maybe more comic shops at one point, just in central London. But it was the same hardcore that you used to see in them, you know?
Yeah.
Very much so. I mean, I was looking at some adverts today, and it reminded me of the Virgin comic shops that used to be in Virgin Megastores and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, they were great. Just how long did it last? Maybe 2-3 years, Virgin?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was it?
Yeah. I can't even recall that.
Great.
Yeah, the one that used to be near Marble Arch, remember, had quite a big comic thing in it, you know? Yeah. Very
but
good.
Coming back to that point you were making, I think the issue I really am most glad I got hold of was Heroes Unlimited number 5.
Okay.
These things are rare as hen's teeth. They really are. And I was sold that for a very reasonable sum of money.
For what particular reason are they rare, do you know?
There were very few produced, to be honest.
Okay.
They were on rotary printers, and they just didn't last very long.
Right.
Going back even further than photocopiers, you had litho, which was the very finest and the best printing, but you had a lot of things produced on rotary printers where the drum was filled with ink. You'd have a stencil wrapped around the drum, and you'd run off maybe 20 copies before you had to replace the stencil with another one.
Right, okay. Yeah. So who ran that one?
Heroes Unlimited. Again, that's by our old friend. Hang on, where's my notes?
Yeah.
He's got notes. He's done more work than that.
Heroes Unlimited. Yeah, that's by Anthony Roche.
Okay. Right.
Who originally did Mary Marvel?
Yeah.
So that's those are the first fanzines in Ireland, and it's important
they
to make the
distinction. Us, I think. Are they 6 months before us? Is that something like that, or?
Yeah, around that time. It's about 6 months before.
Yeah. Okay. Have you met many of the guys since starting this project? Your archive, I mean. Have you met many of the guys face to face? Because I know you're an attendee at London Comic Marts and stuff like that, aren't you?
Yeah, I get up occasionally, but no, it's all been done online.
Right.
I hope to in the future, but no, at the moment it's all done online.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I did a little scan through eBay. I thought, I fancy buying some more because I'm a freak, a bit like yourself, David. And I thought I'll have a look to see what they're going for. And Cerebro 16 was only £7.
Yeah.
Speakeasies in the 90s are about £4. Fancy Advertiser around about the sort of sixth issue, sort of 60 or 70 through to 100, were about £4 to £6. BEM 25, which is the one with the famous one with the Luther Arkwright cover, which is a gorgeous cover, that's only a tenner. That's not too bad, is it?
Yeah. It's not bad at all. I mean, it's a lot of quality reading for a lot much money.
Yeah, yeah. I bought a Rockets Blast comic collector. Are you aware of that one? The United one from the US.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought one of them at a convention recently, and that was about the score. I think that's about £20. Not cheap.
No. You know. But again, it's how rare are these things? Yeah. You know, a comic that might be in the thousands, a fanzine, the ones that have survived, maybe 5, 6, 10 copies, perhaps.
Yeah.
So you're paying for the rarity value as well.
Okay.
So after looking at all of those fanzines and, like, you know, making this huge library of them, so what has the journey for you been like creating fanzine, which is like a celebrating, as it says on the cover, it's celebrating over 50 years of comics fandom in Ireland and the UK. But looking at it, it's an epic book. So yeah. How has that journey, what has the journey been like for you creating this?
Very surreal, to be honest with you. I never thought it would grow so big.
Right.
To begin with, I was waiting for a comment then. But
you know, it's doing well, sir.
I was trying to feed you a line, but there you go. I thought maybe 10, 20 people would join in.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got 60, 70 contributors.
Wow. Okay.
Not all, I must say, that I've been personally in contact with. You know, it's been lovely that I've contacted people. They've arranged things behind the scenes for me. I've got no contact with Alan Moore, for instance.
Right.
But Padraig O'Mealy went out and got him to contribute, which was staggering for me.
Yeah. So I was going to talk through, ask you about some of the contributors. So Alan Moore, what's Alan's, what's his contribution about? Is it an interview with him, or is it?
It's not an interview. It's a little article about Steve Moore,
right?
Who was the one of the editors of Kapow, the first scene.
Right. Because Steve was very much Alan was. I mean, they weren't related or anything, but he was very much in awe of Steve, wasn't he? I think at the start. So he was very much a, sort of a mentor to Alan as he came through, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, and they worked together on various things, various projects. But again, we've got people who worked with Alan as well. We've got Dave Gibbons, for instance.
Okay. What's his input?
He's done another article on the early days of his fan activity.
Oh, okay. What sort of thing was he doing?
He was working for Death Skin, producing covers and spot illustrations and things like that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he started right in the early days.
Yeah.
John Higgins as well, who's the colorist on Watchmen, of course.
Watchmen, yeah.
And he's contributed an article as well.
Oh, okay. Now, John's come back kind of on, for the last couple of years, he's back on the con scene again.
Yeah,
we had him for a while with stuff like Razorjack and stuff like that, but he's back again now, and I think he's done a couple of interviews about Watchmen and stuff. What sort of stuff is he talking about in it?
Again, just his very early days and memories of fandom. It's all nostalgia, really. There's a few articles in the zine that are about things that are current, but most of it is just celebrating the very early days when people got interested in comics and fanzines.
Yeah.
Themselves.
Okay, and there's a few contributors from the Facebook group which we're all members of, aren't there, as well. Also, we've got a few awesome comics people.
Yeah.
Is that, I think Colin Noble, he's done something, hasn't he?
Colin has done something, yeah.
What's he done,
Again, it's an article. It's difficult to describe, you know, each individual one, but the general articles on either comics or the fan world that they remember quite fondly.
And then you've got a number of sort of short strips and page illustrations as well, haven't you?
That's right, yeah. It's I'm trying to make it as general as possible. Like one of maybe Speakeasy. Maybe that would be the kind of feel that I'm going for with it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So... And then you open it up to adverts, didn't you? From, I think, True Believers have got an advert. Gareth Hopkins has got an advert. It's quite a few people.
A couple of people were very kind enough to to send stuff through. I don't know what the reach of this is going to be, but hopefully it'll pay.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, dude, I think, to be fair. I think people are crying out, especially as soon as anyone hears there's an Alan Moore interview, people go nuts, don't they?
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, looking through it as well, it's so sort of professional and like just well put together, I think.
You pick up
a book from, you know, the bookshop or a library or whatever, and they don't look as good like this.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Well, I did train as a graphic designer originally, before I got into the teaching, and I was teaching art and design. Mm. So that's lovely feedback. Thank you.
Yeah, mate. Even the stuff like you've got, like, shadows of images behind text, and I submitted an article to you, and you've actually got screen captures of a couple of the magazines I've talked about, and all this sort of thing to accompany the art, as well as a brilliant illustration, obviously, by Mr. Vanguard here.
It's one of the reasons it's taken so long.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm at burnout. I'm thinking I just should have, you know, shoved it into Dreamweaver and pressed a couple of buttons and then it generated itself. but I've done it all in Photoshop, page by page by page. Ouch.
I get you. Okay. Because I know we're on a bit of a sort of closed Facebook group for contributors, aren't we? And every so often you come up and you say, look, it's not going to be today. It's probably going to be a couple of days' time. Everyone's like, it's all right. Don't stress. Yeah. It's like, it's okay.
Yeah, sleep at this point would be nice. I was going to pull an all-nighter tonight and just try and get it out by tomorrow. Yeah. That's not going to happen. I've had about 3 hours sleep a night for the last week.
Mate, I love it. See, it's like the old school.
Yeah. Anyone in comics, though, will tell you it's better to get it out and make it as good as it could possibly be rather than rush anything, I think.
I think so. And people have been very kind, I've got to say.
Yeah. So how many pages is this thing clocking in at?
I'm going to take a guesstimate now at 250.
Oh, God.
250. That's one of the reasons it's going to be a downloadable PDF.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no way on earth that I could have financed the print.
I know you're saying that, but I would love a printed copy of this. I mean, there's nothing to stop me just taking it and getting it printed, I suppose. No. Yeah.
There'll be two versions, one that's generated to be viewed online and a higher res one that can be printed out, take it to Lulu or wherever your favorite printer is.
Yeah.
And you can get a hard copy. I've tried to design it so that it looks good on screen, but will also look good in print as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. It looks incredible.
You touch on, Tony, is like, are podcasts the new fanzine, as it were?
Yeah,
like,
that's an interesting, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it was said by someone, I think Kevan Scott, who's a bit of a Doctor Who comic writer. I heard him say it on a panel, and I thought that's an interesting idea. Are podcasts in a way the new fanzine? And I suppose in a way they are. I think I jump about a bit in the article, but what do you guys think about that?
Not the limitations, but the technology kind of, it's great sticking on a podcast while you're working or commuting or doing whatever, and you can listen to stuff.
Yeah.
And highly informed people that obviously not this show, but and then kind of get up on subjects and listen to people discuss it. I find it really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose we are literally an audio medium talking about a visual medium, aren't we? That's the big crux of this. What we're doing is we are talking about something that you can't actually see while we're talking about it. Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it?
I think the mindset, like, behind people that decide to do like a comics podcast or something like that is the same sort of mindset of you know, the fanzine mindset, because you're doing it for the passion and you just want to talk about it. But the difference is that most podcasts are just people sat in a room just waffling, whereas like us, whereas a fanzine,
we're in different rooms.
Occasionally. But fanzines, you know, you have thought out articles. Someone's sat down and thought about it and edited their own words. Whereas As you know, people, there's no editing that happens on this show apart from the occasional foghorn.
When you got to bleep out.
Oh, you.
Every week. No.
I haven't done it for about 3 weeks now. I thought it was time.
We put it down to Prolix for last week's. He made me say it. Yeah. Oh,
God.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that, Vince. I think that you've got to have that passion of you, yeah. And that's why we do this.
Yeah.
And that's why they did, you know, these magazines over and over again. You know, and some of these guys, I was reading some of the accounts on your new publication, Dave, and it was like people were like having to drive hundreds of miles to get to a printer because someone had let them down, and then actually stand there while it was printing. Some guys were actually helping with the printing of these magazines to get them out in time to get them to UCAC or something, you know.
Some of the guys from Fast Fiction would sit on the steps outside the mart and staple their zines together.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Just...
Nothing like leaving the last minute.
No. It was a different world. It really was.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was a better world, but it was a certainly different one.
Is there any other sort of anything that you've read that you've enjoyed that could accompany this? I'm thinking of stuff like The Mighty One, which is the book about 2000 AD, or Pat's Be Pure, Be Vigilant. You know, I read, I know Phil Hall has got a book about his memories of sort of comic creation and fandom in London and stuff like that. There's a few that have come out recently, haven't there, that bring back those days of remembering how Forbidden Planet started and what the drama was around that, and, you know, dark they were, and all these sort of comic showcases and all these shops that have kind of disappeared and been and gone, and, you know.
I know three people, at least, who are working on the history of fandom from their own particular viewpoints. Whether those will ever see the light of day, I'm not sure. When I first contacted Alan Austin a few years ago to see if I could archive his scenes, he said not at the moment because I've got one in the works myself.
Okay.
We lost Alan earlier this year, and so we're not going to see that now. The thing is, all these guys, as they'll say themselves, are getting older. There's only a finite amount of time before, you know, won't be able to get these things. We've lost too many people in the last few years that were involved in fandom and comics.
Are you still buying new comics, or are you just reading old comics, or where does your sort of fandom lie now, Dave?
My fandom itself, I'm reading old stuff, really.
Right, that sort of thing.
The Marvel Weeklies and old humor comics from the 60s and 70s.
Mm. Okay.
A real nostalgia trip. When I go to the comic marts, I pick up your stuff, you know, the stuff that's coming out now. I'm afraid I've got zero interest in the Marvel and DC universe.
Right, okay. Mm. Yeah.
You're not the only one.
No. Yeah.
which is a shame, but they're not written for me, I don't think.
Yeah.
And they aren't what I'm interested in now. I used to be. But I'm more interested now in fresh stuff that I haven't read before. With a lot of the Marvel and DC stuff, on a cursory glance, it seems to be retreading old ground, things that, you know, for the last 50 years.
Mm. I mean, we haven't spoken about the comic mart for, I reckon, about a year now, guys, have we? But I have to say, it's something that we as a threesome have decided to visit someday.
Definitely,
because there's no place you can get, like, bag loads of great comics for nothing at these things, you know.
Yeah. The digital subscription service that Marvel and DC run, I think, has driven prices down.
Yeah,
because
you're right.
You can pick old Marvel and DC comics up for pennies, and it's always better to have them in your hand and read them in the physical form. But the availability of the digital comic has driven prices down for dealers, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. And, yeah. Do you know what? The ones that you notice that are more expensive at these marts are the stuff like the Misties, the older 2000 ADs, you know, Eagles, Star-Lords and stuff like that, that you can't really get digitally and are, you know, the British comics that you just don't see anywhere else. You don't see them other than at marts these days, really. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, so that's the kind of things I tend to pick up if I can.
Okay. Well, that's must be a heavy bag on your way back home then, I suspect.
Yeah. It's a brown paper on the way home.
Yeah.
I found a 21-year-old copy of Viz at my mum and dad's house today. We're on to visit.
Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Had a flick through that. I said, how long has that been down there? Because it was down like in the magazine, but that must have been there for years. Oh, obviously it has.
We're still waiting for our Dan Butcher Viz review.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
I came across an old Viz letter that made me crack up. I'll read it out.
Go yes, on. Please. Yeah.
My dad told me on his deathbed that he could, if he could have his life all over again, he wouldn't change a single thing. I sharply reminded him the holiday in Mablethorpe in the early 70s where he slipped in a huge dog turd and ended up throwing a perfectly good pair of suede shoes in the litter bin on the seafront. As I pointed out to him, surely to God he wouldn't want to go through that again. Needless to say, he had no answer to that and died a few minutes later. It's like H. Bentick, Nottingham.
Well, I remember reading one before that said something like, does anyone know the phone number for Girls Aloud's manager? Because I'd like them all to come around and suck my cock.
Oh my God.
They're saying like, I can't be on a Wednesday though, like because the darts or something.
Oh God.
Viz getting away with it for years.
Yeah.
The best one, they had one where they got a letter from a prison and basically saying that they wouldn't have copies of Viz in the prison. So he's like, Viz, the magazine you can't give away in prisons.
Oh God. I can't wait for the episode where we talk about that more.
That was like started by, they used to go like photocopy it and take it around pubs and sell it in pubs.
Oh, right. Yeah, I suppose it was. Yeah, it's the same sort of idea, isn't it, really, when you look at it? Yeah.
So well,
the only one I wanted to mention, Dave, is Tomorrow's. Do you ever read anything by them?
I've had good reports about them.
Various,
a couple of people who are in this have contributed to them. I really should. I've been a bit insular. I'm only really coming back into this whole scene myself, so I'm gradually getting back involved with it.
I mean, I can see them putting your book out. I've got to be honest with you, if you were looking for a publisher, that would be, if I was you, who I would go to.
Yeah,
you know, because they put stuff out like Back Issue Magazine. They did that comic book Babylon comic book history book a few years ago. They've done, so, you know, they do Jack Kirby Quarterly, Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego. They do all this sort of thing.
That's,
you know,
good shout, Tony.
Yeah,
yeah.
I must mention, I think that I've got to thank the people who have taken part in this and just given of their time, professionals and amateurs and all sorts of people who've just done it for the love of it. I'm not sure they do it on a regular basis. So it may only be this special. There may be a second one later in the year to celebrate 50 years of the first British comic convention that was held in Birmingham.
Oh, really? I'd really like to hear about that. Yeah.
So maybe there'll be a second issue. This is killing me. Someone once said, well, this is ongoing now. This has got such a sort of force behind it, and it's gaining momentum.
Yeah,
you could do a series of them. No, I would love to see a regular PDF print fanzine out, which went into in depth into subjects and had this level of contributors. But with no money behind it and just the love of it, I'm not sure it will happen. I'd love to see it and I'd love to read it, But I don't think I can do it.
Well, you can get...
Go on, sorry, mate. Go on.
Oh, you can get sites where you upload the PDF and you can look at it like a kind of a virtual magazine online. And you click the button, the page flicks open. I guess if you did it once a month and people just got their stuff together and you just amalgamated it all and stuck it up there.
Izoo? Is that one of them? Izoo, I think I get...
Yeah,
pretty good. Do you know what I love about it, Dave? Is I love the fact that you've got actual articles. I mean, try and find something that's more than 500 words these days. You do well to find it, mate. You know what I mean? And I think my piece to you was like 3,500, something like that. And mine is not the longest by a long shot in your magazine, you know?
Oh, I mean, Colin's done this piece on Commando.
Yeah.
As we were talking about earlier. And it's a huge, well-researched piece of work that he's taken months to do.
Yeah, that is a real work of love, because Colin loves Commando, doesn't he? He's a member of our Facebook group, and we often chat on there, and he's got a lot of love for that magazine, you know, really good.
He's been so helpful, and that's the other thing, that people have helped as much as they've been able to try and take some of the weight off my shoulders with it. It's a one-man band, and putting this stuff together at the end.
Well, you're doing well.
It's stressful, but
you're doing well.
It only makes it worse by coming on here.
Yeah. So whenever it's ready, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will snap it up and have a read. Where are you looking to put it available online, or where can people find out more info about it?
Well, initially it'll be on the archive site, but pretty soon this week as well there'll be a dedicated fanzine, there'll be a dedicated site that people can go to. But once it's out there in the wild, anyone can distribute it, anyone can give it to the link to anyone else. I just want it to grow and be spread around by as many people as possible.
Nice.
There you go.
So what's your site at the moment? Because not only will this be appearing on the site, but also if you go to your website, you can read untold number of old magazines and fanzines. And I mean, I think, have you even got, is it Horizon? Is that the one that's the Blake 7 fanzine as well on there?
No, I haven't got that.
No, okay. I mistakenly thought it was there. But yeah, you have got a load of stuff on there. So did you want to give your website out now? Or?
Yeah, sure. It's davidprice5.wixsite.com/classic-UK-comic-zines.
Nice. We shall put
If I wasn't such a cheapskate, I'd buy a domain.
That's right. We'll put a link in the show notes that'll make it easier for our listeners.
Yeah. And I'm sure as soon as it comes out, we'll be reposting it on the Facebook page and stuff like that.
Yeah. But if people just Google classic UK comic zines, I'm on the first page. It's easy enough to find.
Really. He's top of the list, people. Top of the list.
And there's surprisingly not that much out online about these magazines either, is there? If you put, UK comics fanzines into Google, and yours was the first. I think yours was the first two things that came up.
Yeah. So you know what's really embarrassing? when you're looking for some information on a fanzine, and you Google it. You get your own site back as a go to Dave's site, he'll be able to tell you about it. I'm the one that's asking.
Nice. Well, we hope all you lovely listeners learned a bit. I learned an awful lot, actually.
Really interesting area. I mean, regularly I'll go back and have a look at them, and just, I mean, we all love a bit of nostalgia, don't we? Comic readers.
Definitely.
And you go back and even just seeing some of the adverts and some of the spot illustrations and even some of the, you know, the titles of these magazines, you think, wow, I remember that. You know, I remember that comic shop that used to be in Leytonstone. Christ almighty, that was a mess, you know, this sort of thing, you know.
a lot of the very famous artists did adverts for the fanzines and for the shops. And they got paid in three comics.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the famous one is Bolland's Forbidden Planet one, isn't it? You know, that's and everything else that stems out of that one. Yeah, definitely. It's interesting.
Nice. I've got about, let's say there's about 300, 400 maybe zines on there at the moment. I'm in the process of scanning at least another 300 that I've got myself.
God. Wow. Okay.
Well, there you go. You got no excuse, people. You need to check it out. See what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool. So, do we have any shout outs this week?
Yeah, guys? I've got a couple.
Oh, you always do. Yeah. You love a bit of it.
Yeah. The speaking of fanzines, this is a guy wrote in to us from America, and I think he's a lover of this sort of genre as well, and he's got a fanzine called Baxter Stock, DC Comics in the 1980s. I forwarded it to you guys. Have you had a chance to look at it yet?
I have.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff. The first issue is out, and the second issue is about sort of comic video games, I'm going to say. Is that right?
There's a screenshots with a Batman game and breaking it down. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That is. Yeah.
Real quality. It's Justin Fransur. He's written it. And if you go to www.dcinthe80s.com, you can find it. It's really reminiscent of the times. Pardon me. Issue one, it's got a great interview with Michael Fife as well from Copra, which is a book that I think Nick Prolix recommended when he came on the show, and is a book that I've since read and is really good. But it's very much a sort of nostalgia button. Really, really good stuff. I recommend that. So dcinthe80s.com. My second one is Flood, which John Freeman and Adam Gross are doing. It's a charity book, which is it was initially conceived to help with the floods that happened in the UK, but now it is conceived. They're going to do a second issue to help with the floods in Bangladesh and India, and to raise money for the Red Cross. What they're doing is, I'm sure our listeners will be interested in, they're looking for writers and artists, and even writer-artists, to explore one-page strips that relate to climate change and or flooding. Now, if you think you're up for that, there's no payment, I'm afraid, if it's a charity comic again, and it's but for a very good cause. If you've got a strip, you've written one, or you'd like to draw one, or you've drawn one, then go to email adgross@hotmail.com with your ideas. There should be a few take-ups on this, I would think. There's or generous people on our listeners. So, yeah, have a look at that. It's really for a really good cause. There you go.
Nice.
Awesome.
I just want to put a shout-out. Thank you to all the people who sent us letters for their awesome comics anthology. Yeah. We're all done now. It's going off to print in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Got some great ones, didn't we?
Yeah, we've got some good ones. So prepare yourself for the answers. But yeah, we're gonna do a show in the next couple of weeks that's going to be all about the anthology. So you'll find out more about it then. But I just wanted to give a shout out and say thank you. You don't need to send any more in now. Not until the first issue's out and you can read it, and then actually send us letters about what you've read.
So, yeah. And none of them were too insulting, were they?
No, nicely thought out. Yeah, it's good. Good stuff. Yeah. So there you go. Dan, have you got a shout?
No, not really. Never do.
Classic butcher.
Lone wolf.
The lone wolf. That's how you get a nickname, saying things like that. Anyway.
Wait, I had a couple of, kind of, I don't know if you call them fanzines, but like on Comic House that I read, and I can't find them. But, Future Quake, that's on Comic House. I read that through this week. That's a quality little comic. I'd definitely recommend that out. I'm not sure if it's really a fanzine, but those roots, isn't
that's
it?
That's a bit of a segue. Would you like to recommend that in your recommendations for this week, Dan?
I'll do a quick recommendation because I've got another comic which is absolutely fantastic.
Go on, okay. Go for it.
Review that. Okay. Should I do it?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you start.
I was raving about this during the week, and it's I got it off Tony because he said how great it was. It's Morgan's Organs.
I think the phrase I use is on our little WhatsApp group. I said, "Fuck me, Dan, you need to have a look at this, mate."
It's great.
Yeah.
The story synopsis is: Morgan faces conflicting pressures from his friends and body parts to break a dry spell. Bran and Pepe square off the central influence of Morgan's decision making. Bran is his brain, and Pepe is his libido. And the brain's trying to keep him on the straight and narrow, and his libido's kind of like trying to have a coup to take over, which he does briefly, and it doesn't go too great. If you kind of like The Inbetweeners, which I think many of our fans would do, you'd love this. It's written by Daniel Brody, and virtually everything else in it is done by Robert Jennings. JENNEX. It's a great comic. I loved it. And there's two issues of it on Comixology. I've only read the first one, but I'm going to get stuck on the second one. Comic House, sorry. It's very surprising how kind of like touching it was. Very humorous, and it's really well done. Yeah,
what
it's
that,
a great comic.
Old school British humor story about people who live in people's brains and make them do stuff.
Was it the numbskulls?
The numbskulls. Is that, you know this, Dave? Come on, you know that.
Oh, yes, it was the numbskulls.
Yeah. It's like that crossed with Viz, or like you say, crossed with the in-betweeners. Yeah, that's kind of where it sits, but it's very funny.
Yeah. It is fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, definitely recommend checking that out.
Nice.
Cool.
I'll go next. My recommendation for this week is one that we've mentioned on the periphery before. That's a nice word, isn't it?
But
we never mentioned it properly in the recommendations, and that's Steve Jackson's The Trolltooth Wars.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is it good? Tell me why it's good.
It's got you in it.
Because you're
exactly
in it.
That's the main reason.
No. Well, actually, no, it's got nothing to do with you. It's the fact that Stan's in it. That's why.
Yeah, Stan is in it. He's cool in it, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's better than you.
Yeah, much better.
We have to put Stan and Tony in the anthology somewhere.
Oh, they've got me,
Yeah, well, they can't get...
Although, have a look on page one of Cockney Kung Fu. There might be a little Stan.
There you go.
Yeah.
Lovely. But, yeah, Steve Jackson's The Trolltooth Wars by PJ Montgomery and Gavin Mitchell. Obviously based on the books of... The Fighting Fantasy books by Steve Jackson, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Which... Those who know that universe and that world really know that world, because it's a vast fantasy epic. You know, is it fighting fantasies? Are they still the choose your own adventures, or are they like straight up novels now? I think they're straight up novels as well, aren't they?
I don't know. I only know the choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Block.
Yeah, I remember that. It was Steve Jackson and it was Ian Livingstone back in the day.
Yeah. Fucking hell, well done.
I remember having a conversation with my secondary school English teacher saying why these books are better than ordinary books because you could choose the story as you went along. And I can remember him looking at me.
Even then, Dan, books. You were bloody belligerent, weren't you, eh?
Yeah. I think we were reading Mice and Men at the time, and I was sort of like espousing the virtues of Death Trap Dungeon.
Every time he said something, you shouted up, and then you turned a corner and there was an orc.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Turn to page 212. Right. And now the Trolltooth Wars is, and we need to get PJ on to talk more about it. It's based on the books by Steve Jackson, and he's adapted it into a graphic novel. He took a story and basically turned it into a graphic novel along with Gav Mitchell. The basic setup is when Balthus dies. Hill goblins raid a caravan transporting a mythical herb to Zaradan Mar. They set into motion a chain of events that plunge Alancia into a vicious war between the two evil sorcerers. I think that's you know immediately what you're getting there. It's just full on sword and sorcery epic sort of work. And for someone who knows nothing about this, you know, these worlds and this universe, although I am a self-confessed fantasy fan, you know, I prefer the fantasy genre to the sci-fi genre.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
This is a cracking read. Very, you know, it's so professionally done by PJ and Gavin. I mean, obviously, on initial looks, Gav Mitchell's artwork just absolutely sings. You look through this and you wonder, why is he not, you know, or what is he going to be doing next? And why is he not working on like 2018 or God knows what? Because there's some absolute stunning like splash pages. And that's another thing as well. PJ's let the artwork sing as well. That's what you got to say. The writing's there. You know, there's this big overarching, you know, adventure storyline of like, you know, you've got this hero character and the journey that they go on with this sidekick. Who I'm not going to describe, but it wasn't what I was expecting when I started reading it, and even that leads to quite an emotional payoff later in the book. There's plenty of death, destruction. There's a suave knife throwing character in it who's got one hell of a moustache. Looks a little bit like John Locke. But you know, some of the pages are drop dead gorgeous. It's one of those. I think Gav works digitally, doesn't he?
I'm not sure, you know.
I don't know. I think he might do.
I think he does.
And it's one of those things where that's fantastic and he's got all the effects and stuff. But it's a shame that some of these don't exist as original pages. Because they're just magnificent. There's one particular moment, which is brilliant leading up to it, where there's like an old sorcerer, you know, he's got an old grey beard, and then within a couple of panels he turns around and he's sort of gotten younger again, and it's a big splash panel of the reveal of like what he truly looks like, and that may be one of my favourite pages in it, despite all the armies of goblins and everything. Tony Esmond does have a brief physical appearance in the book, so you have to pick it up and see where it is. I've got a brief appearance in the book.
I didn't know this.
Because I'm a decapitated head. I am dead. And it's quality. I sort of look at it, smile, and then one single tear runs down my cheek every time I read it. But seriously, the Trolltooth Wars is small press at its best in terms of, like, you know, the thought and the quality and putting into it. And also, what have we got here? Book designed by Mike Stock, color assist by Jim Bamfield. And copy edit by Charlotte Knott. That's the team that did it. Nice. Mike Stock's put together a lovely looking book.
Yeah, it really has, hasn't he?
Yeah. So it's quality. You'll see it. They're going to be at True Believers, I think. Trolltooth Wars has a table. So if you're going to True Believers, be sure to pick it up, because it will sit very proudly in your collection.
Real.
So there you go.
Yeah, I've got to pick that up.
Yeah.
I really want to. Yeah.
I'll sign it for you.
No, I forget.
Oh, God. And the book
on the character.
Wah, wah, wah. Right, okay. Right, Tony.
David, would you like to go next?
Oh yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, sure. I'll just give a shout out to everyone who's been kind enough to contribute to the fanzine. I literally couldn't have done it without you. Literally. And I'm now going to go and get some sleep. But before I go, I'd just like to recommend Phil Elliott's In His Cups collection, Tales from Gimli. Beautiful, clear line style artwork. And it's all about a middle-aged man looking back on his youth, which at the moment I can really empathise with.
Yeah, cool. What is he doing these days? Do you know? Or
I think he's working on some a production with Paul Duncan, who used to do work with him back in the day. And I think there's something going on for next year, I think. Or this year coming, rather.
Ooh. Yeah, there's definitely a blast from the past, that book. I remember that, yeah.
Oh, it's just lovely work. And it collects the mini comics, the little A7 things that used to come out at Fast Fiction right through. He's, you know, doing this character for 20-odd years. Just lovely work.
Brilliant. Nice.
Nice
one.
So what have you got then, Tony?
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to do a 2000 AD story that's now is the second part of it, unless you're a subscriber, because I think you get the comic early, but that's just come out, two parts of it. ABC Warriors Fallout. Has anyone read this yet?
No.
So it's written by Pat Mills, art by Clint Langley, letters by Anne Parkhouse. It began in Prog 2061. Imagine, we're already on 2061. It only seems like yesterday. They were from 2000, isn't it? Yeah. Which is the Scrotnig. I always used to think Scrotnig sounded a bit too like scrotum, didn't you?
Well, I do now.
Yeah. The Scrotnig 100-page Xmas mega special, which also, strangely enough, a coincidence with today, boasts an outstanding cover by Staz Johnson, which features a load of 2000 AD characters, Dredd, Hammerstein, loads of different characters, and we reached out to him today, and we're hoping to interview him at True Believers. And he's somebody who I follow eagerly on social media and put some great stuff out there. Well worth a follow. It opens in Mars in a place called Makana, with a young boy being told a secret that he must never repeat by a sort of sinister and in the shadows hooded wizard. I'm sure we know who that'll be. Turns out he was only told this secret because he's the sort of kid who couldn't actually keep a secret to himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So he runs into the town, tells everyone he's got a secret, and insists on eating some bile. B-I-O-L. which is it's sort of squeezed out of a hose and literally looks like shit. Oh. It looks like shit coming out of this hose, and then he eats it. And with sort of Clint Langley's sort of almost sort of photorealistic style, it is proper gross. And then it changes to a sort of police a group of policemen who are hunting this wizard. The cops are across between a sort of, they look like religious zealots, but with long black trench coats and white brimmed hat and wide brimmed black hats. They look like a cross between a religious zealot, like an SS officer, and possibly like a cowboy sheriff, if that makes sense. And they also take pills that allow them to skywalk, which allows them to sort of hover and fly through the air and stuff like this. And they're called G-Men. And they turn up and they kill this kid's family with these. And they've got these guns that sort of shoot long nails, almost like a short arrow, almost. Like they shoot short, sort of, like, you know, like bolts that you fire in when you build, you know, like that, but sort of sharp ones. But watching from above is Happy Shrapnel. The ABC warrior, he kills the G-Men. He kills them like properly, brutally. But as this is happening, this is where this story is clever. This is why I'm talking about it, is that the humans are complaining that the robots are now self-programmed. And they're complaining that the robots have now got this sort of free will. That's a theme that continues on. Happy Shrapnel, who is now called Tubal Cain, and they describe it. He has a sort of monologue, describes how Mars has gone to shit, about how all the corporations have formed up into just one, and that is owned by Howard Kraut, who's the character from Robusters, you know, the sort of robot with the human's brain underneath the sort of the dome, and he's also in Savage at the moment as well. And Cain says humans are the robots now. And it's really, really clever. And it's with that phrase, you realise what Pat and Clint are trying to tell you. So Cain saves the kid, and it's revealed, of course, that Deadlock is the wizard that we saw at the start of the story. Mm. And Deadlock has gone mad, and he's killing children with his big sword. Or in other words, what he calls it is sending them on the great journey. And then we get an amazing, really beautifully rendered page by Clint of Deadlock kneeling to a sort of ghost of Nemesis the Warlock, who appears as well.
It
explains the two have now merged. And at the end of it, you get Cain vowing to destroy Deadlock. And then, so that's like, that was a 10-pager in the Christmas special, because it was a longer one. And then last week, in Prog 2062, you get an absolutely fucking amazing cover by Clint. I don't know if anyone's seen it. I'll put it on the site of Mongrel surrounded by flames. Have you seen that yet?
No.
Title Smush Hour. Smush Hour. Which I remember reading Smush as a kid with Mongrel and thinking that's fucking horrible, because that's what the noise he makes when he smushes people's heads and stuff, you know. And it opens with Mongrel. He's on the top of one of these sort of Mars City sort of transport buses, which are like buses that are moved about by big cranes. It's sort of a crane system, and the word panels begin to explain something called drapetomania, which is actually a real theory, which has been, I think, debunked a couple of times, but comes from the 1850s in the US, where it explains about slaves wanting to flee and become their own people. This sort of monologue, or this narration, describes how the robots have got this and they're looking to flee and become get away from being the slave sort of race. Okay. Because of that theory, they then become violent and destructive because their small brains can't cope with this theory that they're now free, sort of thing. Really interesting. So Mongrel is on a rampage, and these G-Men who appeared in the first part of the story arrive again, and they use, spoilers by the way for this bit, they use big cranes to basically rip the legs off Mongrel. And you get oil that flies out that looks like blood. So once again, they're sort of paralleling the humans. The robots are the real sort of humans now. And then the last page, this is the big spoiler, the last page is just a full-on, full-page splash of Hammerstein arriving with guns blazing. It is absolutely fucking beautiful. It really, really good. And once again, I actually think the ABC Warriors are the purest extension of books like Charlie's War and Savage and stuff like that. I think because they're like the working class hero, aren't they? they're the sort of the true heroes of the story. And Pat plays with that. He plays with that idea with you to say, look, these are the underdog. These are they're essentially the working class who are controlled by big businesses. And it has, again, 2008, they're using it as a parallel to today, to the society today, and the way that we're ruled by fucking Murdoch and all these sort of people, you know. Very clever. Pat plays with, he has two things that are going on that made me laugh: Thought Book and Brainwave. And they're these sort of pernicious programs that are sort of harmful to original thought. And the writing and the art shows you that we are becoming slaves to this sort of dangerous media, as we are now, possibly, in some people's eyes, becoming slaves to sort of social media. Do you know what I mean? And it's all done in a story about robots. It's just really, really clever. The language that they speak is very immediate, very stripped back. There's not like huge monologues by anyone, but it's all very cool, very, you know, very relevant as well. The art, I'm a big fan of Clint Langley's work, and he's got, I don't know what it is about it, it's just got this sort of nasty, sharp-edged, but beautiful style to it. I read a couple of trades of his. I read a couple of the Slane hardbacks recently, and they're actually, in a good way, they're actually quite hard to read because they're quite disturbing almost. Do you know what I mean? Because the way he sort of spins real hard sci-fi and real hard fantasy and violence in with, he uses very familiar sort of human faces, almost very sort of photorealistic faces, which he spreads out amongst it all. It actually is got a real sort of realistic jarring effect to it in the, and I mean that in a good way, you know. It really brings home to you that you feel the sort of the weapons they're using, and you see these robots fighting each other, and when they're smacking humans, you realize, you feel the impact of each punch, sort of thing. But yeah, I would say it's only two issues long now. If you can get hold of the Christmas special, Prog 2061, and get the most recent one, which came out this week, 2062, absolutely brilliant. Like, real return to form. ABC Warriors, one of my favorite stories from all through the years, you know, no matter who's been drawing it. Brilliant stuff. Pick it up now. There you go.
Nice one.
So there you go, folks. Another show in the bag. We're cooking with gas. Didn't take us long, did it? thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this very informative week. See, we are informative, as well as like C-bombs and ridiculous jokes. and we thoroughly hope that you enjoyed the ridiculous jokes as well. But if you didn't, if we in any way offended you at any point,
you're about to give out my website, aren't you?
Then please don't email us at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, you can also email us tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where we'll be posting up who the next guest is, and etc. etc. These twos have the keys to that car, so you know. who knows, which is quite good actually, because sometimes when I don't check the feed, these guys are checking the feed and interacting with people, so there you go, it's less chance that we'll forget about you. We can never forget about you, unless of course you don't like facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do Facebook, if that's your thing, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk, because it is the only reason that you should go to Facebook, to be honest.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And there's lots of cool stuff happening there, lots of great conversations and interactions. And
if you decide to join the group, please answer the questions, because we're getting a lot of like weary people trying to join the group. We put two questions in. One is simply, are you a listener? Yeah. And the other one is, what are you enjoying at the moment? Yeah. And writing yes, no, will not get you through to be a member. I'll be honest with you. So don't be lazy. Write something in those gaps.
Well, someone put sometimes, or like, it was like a half diss. Like sometimes, but I'm like about half a dozen behind. Okay.
That's all right. Yeah.
I did use Facebook to write a review about Uncle Ben's microwave rice earlier in the week. So that's another highlight.
Jesus Christ. You're a social media beast, aren't you?
I likened it to like a tramp's turd coated with artificial sugar that was 3 months out of date. It wasn't a good experience.
No, but I tell you what is a good experience. When you listen to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, If you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Yeah, well, there's the other one, which is Pod from one side of the convention to the other.
Which is also known as Pod Arse. But wherever you heard us, thank you very much for listening. We really, truly appreciate it. And the show's only going to get bigger and better this year. So, but apart from the show, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter. Also, make sure you download David's Brilliant Magazine, because in it is the first appearance of Cockney Kung Fu in a short one-page strip. So look out for that. So if you haven't got any 1,000 readers to download it, that's an extra one. There you go.
Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I'm going to start updating it after a week or so, because I've needed to just take a week off to chill from doing the Viper pages.
Yeah.
They've been killing me. in a good way.
But they're looking lovely, and we cannot wait to hear more about how Viper came to be in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned.
And so you shall.
You will.
Yes.
And we all will. Oh, my word.
Well, we're really looking forward to True Believers, aren't we? It is going to
big time.
Be brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So make sure you go to True Believers and get a ticket, because it's going to be a blast. Yeah. And they've even made us guests, which is the biggest mistake anyone has ever made in their lives. But we love you, Stuart.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic The Red Mask, which is appearing in the anthology at True Believers, at theredmaskfrommars.com. David, thank you very much again for joining us
thanks,
this week.
Dude.
Yeah, cheers, David.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, guys.
Thank you. Well, really looking forward to this, man. I'm a really big fan of your site. Ever since John Freeman introduced me to it, I've read loads of stuff on there. Really good.
So, where can people find you or your website, etc.? Just give us that again.
DavidPrice5.wixsite.com/classicukcomiczines. On Facebook, David Halfway Price. I'll accept anyone. and if you want to use old-fashioned email, it's david.price@post.com.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So there you go, folks.
So when Dave starts the second volume, you'll be able to write to him, won't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So. But right now, he's going to be stuck in a bunker finishing off the first issue.
Oh, and sleep.
Trust me, sleeping. Yeah, that's what we're going to do when we finish our anthology as well. So, but have a great week, folks. Thank you very much for listening, as always. From David, Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay awesome. Read loads of comics. And what else should they do, lads, this week?
Oh, read Savage Dragon 228.
Yes,
fucking brilliant.
Because we're going to be talking about that next week.
The Bane of Haunt.
I honestly didn't expect to see that kind of thing in like an American superhero comic.
Yeah, there's a lot of that thing as well, wasn't there?
Yeah.
There was a lot everywhere. It went everywhere,
including one of the best sound effects I've ever seen on the page in my life.
Yeah,
but
it's like if you shined a black light in Vince's front room.
God, Jackson Pollock. Anyway, see you next week,
Jackson
folks.
Bullock.
See ya.
See ya.
Okay.